You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
Welcome to episode 189 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Batman The Adventure Continues number 4, Jimmy Olsen number 10, Wonder Woman number 755, Batwoman season 1 episode 20, Oh Mouse, Supergirl season 5 episode 19, Immortal Kombat, Flash season 6 episode 19, Success is Assured, and Legends Tomorrow season 5 episode 12, Freaks and Greeks. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. Harley Quinn writer Sam Humphries has announced on Twitter the series will come to a conclusion with August number 75 issue, which kind of surprised me. I thought, popular as Harley Quinn is, I figured that title would be going on for a while.
I wonder if it's... I am surprised that it must not be selling well enough to continue and ongoing. But part of me wonders if the problem is that it is an extremely popular character for people who aren't necessarily actually buying comics.
That could very well be.
You know what I mean? I think it's the same thing with Superman. I mean, obviously Superman sells better than other DC titles, but he doesn't. I mean, he's one of the most well-known pop culture characters, right?
Right.
And he doesn't sell anywhere near the top of comics. Most of the time, occasionally he does, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, but he's definitely super popular pop culture wise.
Right, and Harley Quinn clearly is too. I mean, not quite as ubiquitous as Superman, but I mean, she's very popular.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if, for whatever reason, that's not translating into the comics.
That could very well be. And it doesn't help that we had the COVID-19 crisis, and then, you know, sales kind of dropped off altogether because they're not putting anything new out.
Right. I mean, I assume at some point they'll put out another Harley Quinn series. My hope would be that they would, as I argue with almost everything, that they would go the miniseries route, because if you're going to go with an ongoing, just stick, in my opinion, you should just stick with it. I think one thing that people who are buying comic books and have consistently bought comic books, I think a fairly unanimous annoyance, at least, that people have is the, like, stopping and starting of series and renumbering and then going back to the old numbering and then, and you know what I mean? And that,
yeah,
back and forth. It just gets annoying. And honestly, I think is long-term more detrimental. We've talked about this many times. It's long-term more detrimental to books in favor of short-term spike in sales, but long-term you lose the readers who would are more likely to actually stick on the book if it didn't do those in the first place. So, I don't know. I have a hard time believing we won't get another Harley Quinn ongoing, just because, like we said, that she's so popular. But if that's the case, why stop the series?
Yeah.
Why not just, like, put, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Put it on a hiatus.
And piggybacking off your doing it as a miniseries, it's much easier to pick up a miniseries than it is ongoings all the time, budgetary-wise.
I mean, a lot of times I talk about miniseries suit certain characters because they simply can't support an ongoing, which I'm a little bit surprised Harley Quinn can't do that. I do think she's certainly popular enough that she should be able to do that. I think in terms of her benefiting from being a miniseries character is that I would suspect that her books would actually probably sell better because people would be more likely to pick them up. It's intimidating if you're wanting, like, you know, somebody, a little girl gets into Harley Quinn, and, you know, so somebody wants to go out and buy her a comic. You're not going to go and buy her volume four, right?
Right.
I mean, we're assuming that, you know, the reading age is appropriate and all that. But my point is, volume four is inaccessible. But if it's a miniseries, if it's just, you know, Harley Quinn fights Batman or whatever, you know what I mean? I don't know, whatever. That is much easier. And I feel like that probably caters to the market that I think she probably is the highest appeal and influence to, are readers that are more likely to pick up a miniseries, a standalone book that doesn't require them to buy six other books as well.
Yeah, very true. All right, let's move on to our next bit of news for this week. Supergirl ongoing comic series is scheduled to conclude with issue number 42, but now the series' final two issues will publish on digital platforms only instead of print. Supergirl number 41 will be on digital exclusively on May 26th and issue number 42 on June 30th. We're starting to see a lot more of these series as they're deciding to stop them going digital only for the last few issues. And I think they're doing that to save money.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're 100% right. Yeah, I mean, that's these books are, they're getting canceled for a reason, and they obviously had them done, right?
Right.
they would have gotten published. The only reason they haven't been published already is you know, we've talked about many times, but it'll cost them money to print them, and it doesn't really, I think, cost them almost anything comparatively to do it digitally. So
yeah. All right, for our next bit of DC news, DC announced the launch of a twice-monthly miniseries, Deceased Hope at World's End, a 14-chapter limited series by writer Tom Taylor that is set in the span of a time jump in Deceased number 5, before the fall of Earth. The series leads into the launch of DC's sequel, Deceased Dead Planet. While print editions of Dead Planet number 1 will arrive in comic book shops on June 30th, Hope at World's End appears to be exclusive to digital. So here we are again seeing another miniseries here that's going to be digital exclusively.
I'm a little bit surprised that this is digital because I believe DC sold well, I think. I might be wrong, but I believe it was considered a successful series. Clearly enough, they did a sequel to it. I wonder if they are going this direction because if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure about this. Tom Taylor at one point was doing the Injustice comics. I don't know if he did. I don't think he did the entire series, but he did most of it. And it was digital first and much later came out in physical form. And I'm wondering if they're thinking, well, he was really successful with this digital comic before. Maybe it'll sell better digitally.
Yeah, that's a possibility. It feels like DC is kind of dipping their toes into if they can get away with doing more digital series and not printing them. It is a money saver, for one. And they may be trying it on stuff that's not as popular. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. We are definitely, whether it's DC's decision or probably more likely, it's voices coming from above them, even being like, you guys have got to cut some production costs down here. I think we're going to see an increase in digital focus. Honestly, not just DC, but I don't know. I don't think we'll ever stop getting fully physical comics, but I feel like we're going closer and closer to being an increasing digital market, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think it would be less likely if DC and Marvel were independent still in terms of their ownership, but they're not. They're both owned by massive corporations who are very much about the bottom line, which is, I mean, that's their prerogative as a business, but you know what I mean? So ultimately, that decision is sort of out of their hands, and it's hard to argue financially that digital comics isn't the way to go.
Right. And I got to admit, I read all my comics digitally. It's few and far between when I actually have a print copy in my hand. So,
yeah, I much prefer physical. I mean, in terms of, I like just having the book physically to read. I personally think it reads easier for the most part, depending on the comic. I think it usually reads easier in physical, but I understand the benefits, and I do not want physical comics to go away, but I feel like the writing's on the wall to a certain extent with it.
Yeah. I don't want physical copies to go away either, but I actually prefer the digital copies. It's much easier to keep track of my comics, and I got them at my fingertips pretty much, so I don't have to be having this big old box. Where the heck am I going to put this at? I've already got enough of those.
One reason for me personally, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, I like trades just because usually it's cheaper, to be honest with you. And you get the whole story. But in particular, one of the reasons I really like them is because I can read it and then I can give it to somebody else. And not to say that you can't do that digitally, but that's something personally I'm such a huge, you know, comic book nerd, obviously. I like to try and get other people, like I find a story I think might get somebody interested in a comic that they might not think, you know, they might not be, you know, inclined to read comics normally, but I try and find something that maybe appeals to them, a different story, not necessarily DC, but something, some sort of story that is up their alley. And a lot of times it doesn't always, you know, pan out, but a lot of times it kind of opens people's eyes, like, oh, you know, actually this was pretty good. Maybe comics are interesting after all. So that's personally for me, that's why I like physical so much, because it makes it easy for me to, I lend out comics constantly. So it just makes it easier for me to do that.
That's understandable. All right, up next for DC News, Green Lantern Earth 1 Volume 2 goes on sale July 28th. And I'm excited.
Yeah, I think I shouted out about this like two or three podcasts ago, I think.
It was recently.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly, but yeah, I agree with you. I'm very excited. I've really enjoyed Volume 1 quite a bit. I'm very, very excited to get a hold of Volume 2.
Me too. And I'll probably end up rereading Volume 1 before I start reading Volume 2. So,
I have enjoyed Grant Morrison's run, but I think that Earth One was probably my favorite Green Lantern story I've read in the last 5 years or so.
It was good, that's for sure.
That and the Far Sector. I have really enjoyed Far Sector.
I have too, and I've missed it not coming out recently. So I haven't seen it come back on our schedule yet. So hopefully soon. All right. Up next for DC News, Batwoman is to be recast for Season 2 as Ruby Rose exits. According to multiple sources, Rose was unhappy with the long hours required of her as the series lead, which led to friction on set. And it was thus decided by her and the network and studio that they would part ways.
I mean, it's her prerogative, it's her life, but Drew, why the hell would you sign on to a show like this if you weren't sure that you could handle that sort of, I get not like, if you can't handle that sort of production, that's fine. Not every actor does that, but don't sign on to do the show. I just don't get that.
I'm wondering, has she done television before?
Yeah. Yeah. I know she's done, she was on Orange is the New Black, but I have not seen that entire show. My understanding, she was like a, you know, an on again, off again character. I cannot speak beyond that, but she's definitely never done something to this level of, you know, work time commitment.
Yeah, maybe she just didn't realize what kind of a commitment it was. And being a series lead, they're going to have the most time on camera.
Yeah, which I get if it's not for you, that's fine. But you, especially as the series lead, I guess I find myself not that forgiving about it, because frankly, you should do your homework. You should know there are plenty of people that she could have asked around to get, you know what I mean, get information.
Yeah,
this feels like a thing. It feels unbelievably selfish that it was really great for her career-wise to sign on to this, and as soon as it kind of catapulted her a little bit more, she didn't really like it. She didn't want to put in the work, and so she's done with it. You know, damn whatever happens to the rest of the cast in the show.
Well, I'm wondering what they're going to do. I'm wondering if they're going to, when they recast, if they're going to do something story-wise that'll affect the reason why she looks different. I've been thinking about that since I've heard this news.
I think they might do that, especially because they're focusing on one of the characters is able to, you know, disguise people so much with Alice. However, in my opinion, I think the best thing to do would be to do effectively what they did with the Hulk and War Machine with Marvel, which is to not acknowledge it at all.
Just switch it out and not acknowledge
it. Switch it out and just do it. Just be like, this is the new actress.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
You know what I personally, that's what I would do. I don't know if they'll go that route or not. I'm sure they'll have some line, like you look different or something like that. But that, to me, that would be the extent that I would want. Like some brief acknowledgement, like, yes, it's a new actress. She's here. We're moving on. That's what I would want.
Got used to Ruby Rose playing Batwoman, so it's gonna take a while to get used to somebody new.
I honestly feel for this show. It's not my favorite of the CW shows, but it is good and it definitely deserves another season. And I worry that if they don't nail the casting, and that's not to say that they necessarily did with Ruby Rose. I mean she was good, but there were things I didn't enjoy about her performance. But if they don't nail the casting, it leaves that window to criticism open of like, oh, she's not as good as Ruby was, right?
Right.
And then I worry that just ultimately tanks the show.
Yeah, I see your fear of that.
I'm not even saying like they can cast someone who's pretty good that would be good enough for you and me, but it might not be good enough for the core audience or the Twitter audience, which clearly has a massive sway on CW shows, as we've seen. You know, I don't know. Hopefully it does. I worry that the lead on a show is just not something that happens that often.
I know. This is the first time something like this has happened on a CW show where you have a lead leaving and you had to replace them.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I understand that being too much of a commitment for somebody. I personally think that you should know that ahead of time. In my opinion, that's, as an adult, you should know yourself well enough at a certain, like, some level of self-awareness to go like, you know what, I can't really handle that level of work. And it's just, yeah. And then, but then as like the reports are saying, and obviously, you know, you have to take them with a grain of salt, but to then take that out on other people on set, like your own frustration, like that's just, it just, the whole thing screams selfishness to me. And it's very frustrating.
Yeah. I just hope they do. I just hope when they recast, we get a great, great actress to take that role.
Yeah, I agree. I think they can. I'll be very clear. I think it would be very feasible for them to upgrade in terms of actress. And I hope they do, because I want to see where the show goes. I certainly nitpick some stuff that goes on with the show, but I mean, I don't hate watching it, so I do want to see it keep going.
You nitpick? Never.
I know. It's so rare, but every once in a while.
All right, on to our next bit of DC news. HBO Max will release Justice League The Snyder Cut in 2021. I was very surprised to hear this.
I can't believe it's happening, Drew. Not only is this actually happening, people have been asking for this for years since Justice League came out. And it's actually happening, one, which is unbelievable. It's unbelievable that they succeeded. But two, they're spending an additional $20 million on it to finish it. That's crazy.
I know it is. But
are
you
kidding me? They not only – that was one of the biggest – and with the last like 5 years in terms of superhero movies, one of the biggest superhero flops. And not only are they releasing a different cut of it that might not be any better, they're going to spend another $20 million on it. God bless America, Drew.
You know what's going to be funny is it's going to, I have this funny feeling it's going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, I'm sure it will bring in people to, when it comes out, I'm sure it'll bring in people who aren't on HBO Max to go and check it out.
Yep. I have a feeling that's what's going to happen. They're going to see a huge surge for that month or whatever because people want to check it out.
I feel very comfortable saying it's not going to be a masterpiece. I feel like we've seen enough of Zack Snyder's work with the DC Universe. Batman vs. Superman was not like interfered with by the studio. In fact, you can watch the extended cut, which would be like, in theory, the full vision of him. It's not great. I don't know. I do think, I will say this. I think that his version will be much more narratively coherent. I think in that, in terms of like the story will be less obviously chopped together by different things, and maybe Henry Cavill's face will look right. But beyond that, I mean, I personally enjoyed Man of Steel, and even that is a very controversial opinion. The other ones, though, like, where's the track record? This is going to be great. That's why I can't believe people fought this hard for that cut. That it probably will be better because Justice League was not very good. But it's not going to be that much better. It's not going to be $20 million better, Drew. $20 million. It's not going to get released in theaters. So I'm sure it will drive up subscriptions, but enough to recoup that? 20 million?
I don't know. Things may change. They may end up releasing this in theaters too. You never know.
Well, that's true. When it does, you know, when the cut is finally put together and they realize that it's a Oscar winner. Naturally, it will get released in the theaters first and then go to HBO Max. But tentatively for now.
All right. And for our last bit of DC news, I just want to talk about HBO Max in general. It came out today. And I don't know if you have it or not, but I've been planning this whole time to get it just because I knew it was going to have a bunch of DC stuff on it. So I pre-ordered it because if you did, you could get it cheaper. There is a lot of DC stuff on here, surprisingly. And it has a lot of the stuff that was on the DC Universe on here.
So I'm glad that you brought this topic up. So we've talked about this a lot. I've also been looking forward to this just because I've been looking forward to not just the DC stuff, but the broader Warner Brothers catalog.
Me too.
I've been excited because they're not like, it's obviously they're going to add stuff to it, but it's in theory, it's the whole Warner Brothers catalog or most of it, right?
A lot of it.
As opposed to Disney Plus, which I like, but it is Disney Plus is so focused on only the, you know, the stuff that fits within the family friendly, and all the other stuff that Disney owns is just sort of set to the side. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You don't get that. Like, they own Fox. They own, like, all of those Fox films, 21st Century Fox films, in theory, to my knowledge, Disney could put on Disney Plus, but then they would have to completely change the scope of the app. So I get what they're doing, but you're not getting the full Disney catalog. I like that HBO Max, at least at some point, in theory, you're getting close to, if not all, of the Warner Brothers catalog, which is huge. I mean, that's a massive umbrella of entertainment.
There is a lot. The DC stuff they have on here, they have a lot of the newer movies. Like, they have Batman versus Superman on here. They have Shazam. They have Aquaman, Joker, Justice League. And then they got some older stuff on here, like the Green Lantern movie. They have the Catwoman movie on here. They also have like things like Batman the Killing Joke and Batman the Dark Knight Returns, some of the animated stuff they had on the DC Universe. Then I noticed they have the old Batman franchise with Michael Keaton and those movies. One of the things I noticed, that was missing was the Superman stuff, and I know that stuff's on DC Universe at the moment. And I also noticed they had Doom Patrol Season 1 on here. Now, we knew Season 2 was coming on here, so it makes sense that they put that on here. But I hadn't gone and checked to see if it was still on the DC Universe app today. I meant to do that.
To my knowledge, it should be on both. So one interesting article I read today was somebody in charge of HBO Max, I can't remember who it was exactly, was saying, and this really surprised me, and I also don't believe it, that currently Doom Patrol is the only thing they plan on double dipping between the two apps. So my understanding is, well, I think one of the reasons Superman might not be on HBO Max is because it's on the DC Universe app right now.
Okay.
I don't know. There might be other legal things tying that up. I just can't see that lasting, though.
I know. I can't either. I'm not planning on paying for both of them. Now, when Titans comes on there, I'm going to get it for the short time to see Titans, and so we can review it on the podcast, too. But I'm not planning on keeping it all year round. So
it's got to be the thing. And we've talked about this. The thing that's got to be holding it up is the digital comics library, which I love. And I get why they can't just merge the entire thing into HBO Max, because the argument would be people who don't want that digital comic library could scapegoat it in terms of, like, I'm paying extra for this feature that I don't even want. Like, the price of the subscription should be lower. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So I'm wondering, even though that might not necessarily be true, but that's, I imagine that's something that's holding it up. I can't foresee. It's so stupid, long term, to be frank, to have two separate services. Especially because, and this surprises me, DC is somehow the biggest pull for this service. I'm surprised by that, because I figured it would be some, like, frankly, I thought it would be HBO. So if DC is your biggest pull, why DC on its own, for comic book fans like us, there's a huge appeal to it. Obviously, we both got it. We both really enjoyed it. But that's a niche thing. Like, that we are not in the majority. The majority of people are not going to be interested in getting the DC streaming service app, which is why we were so worried whether a show as great as Doom Patrol would get, you know, a second wind, because would enough people be watching?
Yeah.
On HBO Max, there are definitely going to be enough people watching that show and seeing how freaking hilarious that show is. Why would you? I just don't understand why they're going to. And you're going to have, at least in theory, as of now, there's going to be a Green Lantern show that's going to be on HBO Max. Why would that? Like, that doesn't make sense for it not to be on the DC app. Right. I know it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think long term you can have both of those.
Now, I noticed that Batwoman is on here. Now, you know, it's the newest CW shows. All the CW shows have been going to Netflix. They've had a contract for years. But obviously they did something different with Batwoman, so she'd be on the HBO Max. So I'm wondering if any new DC CW show is going to be coming to HBO Max. Stargirl is on DC Universe right now and the CW. Are we going to see that eventually move over to HBO Max?
As of now, no. Because it's a DC Universe thing. And as they've said, in theory, as of now, the only thing that they're going to double dip is Doom Patrol. I don't know. I just don't see that being successful long term, though.
I don't either.
I have to say, and I say it as somebody who works at a middle school and works with people who are, frankly, the target audience for CW, if they moved the CW shows from Netflix, that would be killer. That would absolutely be brutal for those shows. So many kids, I'm telling you, only watch these shows when they come out on Netflix. And some of them don't even, like, I talk to some kids and they're like, wow, Miss Jacobs, how have you seen all of these episodes already? Like, did you binge the whole thing in one night? And I'll be like, no, I watched it weekly. Like, wait, it's on TV. Like, they don't know it's on TV.
I can tell you, I have some of those junior high school kids. they will wait for it to hit Netflix so they can binge it all at once. I couldn't believe Flash just came out. When did Flash just come out? A week ago, maybe? On Netflix?
Probably, yeah.
Both of my my freshmen and my seventh grade, well, now they're eighth grade and sophomore, but both of them have already watched The Flash the whole season. I was like, dang.
Which is fine, which is totally fine, but that only, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they can't, I am surprised that Batwoman is on HBO Max, because I am surprised that Netflix would agree to that. So I actually wonder if Batwoman is on Netflix. I'll admit I haven't looked.
It's not.
I don't know if that's,
Yeah, I know. Anybody that wants to watch Crisis, I don't know how they're going to do it if they don't have HBO Max. You know what I mean? Unless it's still on the CW app. I don't know.
Netflix has been an integral part of the success of the CW Arrowverse. To be completely frank, it just is.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Very, very vital to the success of those franchises. So, like, they probably will at some point pull them off of Netflix. And I think that's going to be a horrible, horrible decision when that happens.
Yeah, but I see it happening.
Yeah. Oh, and I get it, because you don't want to be giving money to your streaming competitor, but, like, I don't know. I think it's going to depend entirely on HBO Max really taking off. And I don't know if it's going to do that right away, especially when you're comparing it to the Goliath that is Netflix.
Yeah. But stranger things have happened.
Yep.
All right. Well, that wraps up DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Tony Heath.
And we've been watching Doctor Who for 5 years.
So that makes us experts.
Probably.
I once heard a guy say that he listened to a 4-hour podcast by an expert, which made him an expert.
So we're experts.
Definitely experts.
And you can be an expert, too.
All you have to do is listen to
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
It's a podcast
that we make
together,
sometimes with friends.
Listen to it.
Or else.
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
A proud member of the ESO Network.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Batman, The Adventures Continues, number 4. So Robin is on his motorcycle heading back to the Batcave. Batman sent him home because it was a school night, and we see that Robin sees Deathstroke and decides to follow him into a museum. And Deathstroke is tracking Firefly, and Robin joins him for backup. Apparently, Firefly is also a bug collector. And just release these Asian giant hornets. And we see Deathstroke and Robin are able to neutralize the hornets. Firefly shows up and a fight ensues. Deathstroke is able to disarm Firefly, but Firefly launches fire at both of them, seemingly burning them. Meanwhile, Batman is battling the Mad Hatter and the Wonderland Gang, and of course defeats him. Some sort of flash or reflection of light or something catches Batman's eye, and he's off. And next thing we know, Batman is standing on a rooftop staring down at some crime scene.
It's the crime scene he was at.
Oh, it was the crime scene he was at? Okay. For the Wonderland Gang?
Yeah, the implication is that, so he's exiting the crime scene that he shut down, right?
Right.
And he senses what we believe to be Jason Todd. And tries to get up on the rooftop. He says he's got about 30 seconds. It takes him 33 seconds, as he says. So he's too late. And he looks back down at, basically, he's looking back down at where he was 30 seconds ago.
Oh, I thought he saw Deathstroke or something.
I have to admit, I agree with you. I thought it was a little bit, I got what they were trying to say. It was a little bit hard to follow, but he's definitely looking down at where he was.
Okay, I got a question for you. Why is an assassin going after a villain that Firefly like he's a superhero for? I didn't get that.
He's putting on a show for Robin.
Ah, okay, okay. Because he's trying to earn his trust.
Right.
Okay, I get that.
It was so weird. It felt so weird because it was all everything about that entire thing was so out of character for Deathstroke. But I was able to look the other way because it made sense. Like, it was like you understood why he was – like, there was an explanation why he was out of character. But it was still weird to read nonetheless.
Yes, it was. All right. Well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Jimmy Olsen number 10. So this issue opens up with Jimmy reporting a story on his interdimensional jewel thief wife, Jinx, as she hijacks some bananas. And we see Perry White is less than thrilled. That was so freaking hilarious. Then we get Jimmy stuck on a roof with his wife, his sister, and some other dude that I recognized, but I didn't remember what his part in the story was. Then we get to Julian Olsen, who is broke. He finds out that Jimmy has used none of his trust fund, but he found out if Jimmy dies, his trust fund reverts back to the family. And thus we get the reason why Julian has been trying to kill Jimmy. We also got to learn more about, what's that? Porta Khalid? I can't pronounce that.
The Porcadillo?
Yes, think. Thank you. And how he's trying to help save Jimmy. And then I think my favorite was Jimmy goes to his own funeral dressed as a woman, kisses his brother, and then takes off on a spaceship. So freaking hilarious.
That was amazing. Also, the defeating the alien invasion with the banana peels.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, I'm going to miss this when it's gone. We've only got two more issues left.
I don't know. I don't think we've seen anything. I'm hoping that they can convince Matt Fraction to do another. Not necessarily Jimmy Olsen, but just let him pick another character and do another miniseries with,
yeah.
Because I would very much enjoy it.
Yeah, I would too.
I think DC has done some of these, and I would love to see more kind of like comedy titles, so to speak.
Yeah.
Not to say I like the serious action comics, obviously. A lot of them, that's what we read, but every once in a while, it is nice to kind of get something that's a little more slapstick, I guess.
Like the Terrifics?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the Terrifics, to a certain extent, more so with Wonder Twins.
Yes.
I thought was phenomenal in that regard. A while ago, the quality was very much up and down. During the New 52, there was a futuristic Justice League. I want to say 2099, but that's Marvel. 3000, I think it was 3000. I think it was Justice League 3000. Was not initially sold as a comedy series, and I think it wasn't originally intended to be. But it was done by the people who were famous for the Justice League International run that's famously funny. And so they had this book. I think it probably just wasn't doing that well, and it very quickly shifted into a comedy series as well. Then it was pretty enjoyable too, although again, it was very much, in my opinion, very up and down in terms of quality compared to some of the other ones we've talked about.
Right. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week, Wonder Woman number 755. So this issue opens up in Manhattan with Donna Troy being confronted by Devastation and Armageddon. And they're trying to recruit Donna to help them fight against Wonder Woman. We see Wonder Woman is talking to elementary kids about her life in Themyscira. And we see that Nora, the cop she's become buddies with, seems to be irritated that Wonder Woman is teaching them ideas about Themyscira when they don't really have a context for them. I don't know about you, but I'm not really sure how I feel about this new character, Nora. She seems to be more of an antagonist than a partner.
I don't get the purpose of her character, if I'm being completely honest. She's never really doing anything to affect the story.
No, except nagging Wonder Woman.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, she's like, you're right. She's only there. And not most of the time it's her question at minimum questioning, often nagging. Then other times she's just there. Like she's constantly present in these stories, but she's never done anything that actually affects the story one way or the other. She's just sort of present.
Yeah. It's weird. All right, well, we see some bug is buzzing around Wonder Woman, and she reaches up and grabs it, and she's teleported to Norway, where Helen Paul wants revenge on Wonder Woman for lying to her about being Paula von Gunther, a Valkyrie. Now, I don't know if you remember. I went back. I would have swore we talked about this on the podcast. I went back looking through our archives, trying to find where we talked about Wonder Woman Annual number 3. I could not find it for the life of me. I thought we had talked about it. I know I read the story because I reread it and I'm like, oh yeah, I read this before. But I couldn't find where we talked about it. Do you remember talking about it?
I don't know. I don't remember. I'm sure we did. We must have.
That's what I thought, but I could not find it. So, but we did lose an episode, one of our episodes, though, that we recorded. So might have been on that one.
Yep, that's it for sure.
So
mystery solved.
But I remember the story. When I read this, I went back and reread Wonder Woman Annual number 3 to refresh my memory on the story. And I remembered that character, and I remember that story being pretty good.
I have to say, for whatever reason, this story really just was not hooking me. I just wasn't buying into it. The conflict, I guess, especially, and as you mentioned at the beginning, half of the comic is this group of villains trying to convince Donna to join their Wonder Woman scorned us cause, and she's like, no, she's done so much to help me, which is like the refutes all of their arguments, like even for each of them, like each of them are like, she tried to help me, but I'm not happy with the level of help I received. It just doesn't ring true, I guess. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, just the whole time I was reading it, I was like, what are you guys complaining about? Like, you guys are, they're so serious and they're so intent on destroying her for what seems like she buttered the wrong side of their biscuit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know it's more serious than that, but that's just, I couldn't buy into the conflict of the comic just because the whole time I was like, what you guys have no leg to stand on. What are you talking about?
I don't know about Devastation and Armageddon, but if you go back and reread Wonder Woman Annual number 3, you'll understand what Helen's issue is, because that's what that annual's about. That's what that story's about. And, it makes sense for her. I don't know about the other two's beef with Wonder Woman, because they haven't really spelled that out clear. And I have to say, when I read this issue, it was mediocre to me, too. I was actually, the Wonder Woman Annual number 3, when I reread it, that was more exciting than this issue. And it made sense why, if you forgot what Helen's beef was with Wonder Woman, you have to read that issue.
When did that come out?
It came out in October, I believe. That's how long it's been. That's why I've forgotten the story. And it was written by Orlando, so.
That's a problem, though. You can't. I'm sorry, but you can't. That's too long ago.
I agree with you. Because I had forgotten. That's why I went and reread it.
Especially in to be frank, especially the fact that the story was in an annual. Not everybody. Obviously, we do for the podcast, but. Though annuals are not frequently, in my opinion, frequently read comics anymore. I know at one point they used to be big sellers, but they're not. They're usually like throwaway issues for the most part. Like, we have to do this for whatever publishing reason.
Yeah, because most of them have multiple stories in it that don't really connect
they're
to
doing
the larger
it because
story.
I can't even remember why. There's some reason that they have to exist. And so there's just this relic of comics publishing. And they don't really want to do anything with it. So you frequently just basically, to be frank, you usually get a garbage can of ideas or like scrapped ideas and stuff of like, or just a, hey, can you real quick shoot us a 5-page Wonder Woman story? Or, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I just, I'm not trying to criticize that specific annual, but that's, you can't have a comic, a story come out in an annual in October and then have this comic come out now. And even without the delay, it still would have come out at best April, right?
Yeah.
So it's still, I mean, that's still almost half a year.
I'm not going to disagree with you. Oh, well, I hope the story gets better, but I don't know.
Yeah, and like I said, it wasn't, I did not find it poorly written. I personally wasn't buying into the conflict. I just really wasn't, it just felt petty to me, I guess. And I'm sure the conflict would have more if I reread that story, but I don't feel like I should have to, I guess.
And I doubt if you will.
I won't. I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to.
See, I already knew the answer to that. All right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
What's new on the 42 cast? Let's ask my co-hosts.
We're talking about Doctor Who.
Comic book shows and movies.
And we're talking about all things Star Trek.
And so much more.
Check us out on Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
It's only on the 42cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
So Nathan, when are we finally talking Babylon 5?
And we're back! Let's talk Batwoman Season 1, Episode 20, Oh Mouse! At the end of last episode, Jacob Kane promised Batwoman that if they ever met again, it would be war. And he kept that promise this episode. This week's villain is a former football player who was imprisoned after murdering a ref on a field during a game. His violence was the result of injuries sustained while playing that were covered up by the team. He's out for revenge for those who hurt him. Using a pair of machetes and being immune to pain, the football player was hard for both Batwoman and the crows to take down. After getting injured in her first attempt to take down the football player, Batwoman forges an alliance with Jacob Kane and the Crows. Batwoman's plan to draw out the football player by using the coach as bait. The plan works and Batwoman is able to talk the football player down. Even though Batwoman had already subdued the football player, the Crows swoop in and just shoot the football player in the back. And then we see them surround Batwoman and she's gets blasted with bullets as she escapes into the air. And Jacob made it pretty clear that he blames Batwoman for the death of his wife. Now with Alice, we see she is on the hunt for kryptonite. She learns that the only kryptonite is at Wayne Enterprises and is unattainable to her. Mouse urges Alice to move on and leave town with him. And Alice agreed and even ceremonially burned her Alice in Wonderland book. But in actuality, she poisons Mouse and tearfully chooses her vendetta over her friend. And we see Alice has a new plan to obtain the kryptonite. She gives Hush the face of Bruce Wayne. So, what'd you think about this season finale?
I think I honestly believe they should have, even though this episode was obviously done, I truly think they should have not shown this episode because I think the last one really works much better as an impromptu finale, in my opinion.
I knew you were going to say that.
it's fine in terms of it's weird because it's one of those weird pseudo fillers you get where there's a lot of things that build towards the finale, but the plot itself isn't actually.
Yep.
Which we see frequently with CW, and it's bizarre, but this was clearly one of those. And so the plot itself is a filler episode. Yes, very important things happen, but for the main plot itself, it's a filler episode. I honestly think they would have been better served cutting it off.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Last episode was much better. Would have been a much better finale than this one.
It had all of the classic. I mean, it would have been obviously very coincidental, but it had all of the perfect, like, things you want for a finale. They teased a villain with Sophia. They teased the conflict between her and her dad. They teased all, like, the kryptonite thing. which frankly would have given them more time to come up with something better. But anyway, in terms of the episode itself, I have to admit, I did not particularly enjoy the main plot, because it was like, it was very clearly they were trying to, it was like the writer room had just seen the Aaron Hernandez documentary on Netflix and were like, hey, we should write an episode about that, because I mean, it was unbelievably anti-football.
Yes,
and
it was.
I will admit, I am a fan of football, so I'm biased in that regard, but like, holy crap, concussions are a very, very serious issue. Extremely serious issue. But he just breaks a guy's neck on the field? I mean, what the hell is that? You know, that's cartoonish. But then the other thing that bothered me about it is this whole subplot with the kryptonite is showing that, like, this kryptonite is the only thing that can cut through the suit. Like, it would basically, like, the suit can't defend against that, which I can buy. I have no problem buying that. But by saying that, you then insinuate that nothing else can harm her in the suit other than kryptonite. And yet in this very episode, Drew, she breaks her ribs and she's nearly taken out by a villain wielding nothing but machetes twice. Were those machetes sprinkled in kryptonite?
Sure.
What about all of the other times this season, the numerous, numerous times she has been incapacitated in the bat suit? Was kryptonite involved in that? When a villain hits her over the head with a bar and she's knocked out, was that bar made of kryptonite?
Sure it was, Cletus. You just didn't know it.
But you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I see what you're saying. I know how ridiculous the kryptonite thing is. Shoot, you could easily drown her. That suit's not going to save her from drowning.
You can't. The problem, I totally buy into the only thing that could, like a bullet that could, for whatever reason, her suit is unbelievably bulletproof, ridiculously bulletproof, as we saw in this episode with point blank shots. That was something not even Nolan's Batman suit could do that. Like, yeah, they said that he couldn't take direct gunfire like that, but she can survive that.
It must
fine.
Be.
I can accept that. But then nothing should be able. I'm sorry, but frankly, nothing should be able to hurt her in the bat suit.
It must be made of adamantium.
Then anybody that punches her should shatter, absolutely shatter their hand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I just, that's, it just doesn't. I have no problem if you just don't draw attention to it and people are shooting at her and the gun and the bullets just bounce off of her bulletproof suit. That's fine. I really don't mind that. Or if so, you know, and she gets knocked out by somebody later, I don't question it. I question it when you call my attention to it, when you intentionally take my gaze and tell me, hey, focus on the security of the suit. And you show in the exact same episode where you're telling me that kryptonite's the only thing that can hurt that suit, you're showing me her getting her ribs broken. Which one is it? Which one is it? Just, I cannot describe how frustrating that is.
I'm not going to argue with you. I have a feeling because of the actress change and stuff, it's going to feel like a totally different show when season two comes back on.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. My hope, to a certain extent, is that they use this as an excuse to rewrite their plans a little bit. One other thing we should definitely talk about. I love the workaround with Bruce Wayne, where they clearly, for whatever reason, they can't have Bruce Wayne actually on the show. And so they have him, but they're like, yeah, but he's not actually Bruce Wayne. What a clever workaround. It works perfectly with Hush. Also, we totally called it with the recasting, right?
Yep.
Regardless of whether he was Bruce Wayne or not, like, they had to. If you wanted to get more serious with Hush, you had to change the actor.
Yeah. And so, he feels like he's going to be the villain of next season.
Is he, though? I mean, I agree. It seems like it, but there's still the Sophia character that they keep talking about.
Oh, too. Yeah, that's right. You're right.
It could end up being both, but that ends up being messy, usually.
Yeah. Unless they do more than one arc, which would be fine.
I would be totally fine with that. I would be very okay if the first half is fake Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Slash Alice. With one thing I have to say is, one thing that's a real shame with this season, in particular of all of the CW shows getting cut short, is we're going to have to do at minimum half a season with Alice.
Yep.
And we just keep treading water with that character. It's not that I don't find her character interesting. It's that we're not doing, like, in order for her character to keep sticking around on this same insane mission, they keep escalating to the absurd, which works. Within one season, it makes sense. Like, her killing Mouse in this is ridiculous because she's going so far down this path that she's destroying her own life, which I buy into that. That makes sense for her character. But it works best if that is two episodes from her ultimate demise, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to work great if now there's no way. Some inevitably it's going to end up at least being half a season. I could be wrong. I would like to be wrong, but I can't imagine that Alice just goes away two episodes into next season.
Unless they do like the Titans did.
Which they could. I guess we can't rule that out, but that character needs a serious change, which is something you get at the end of a season. And because, unfortunately, we didn't get that, it's not that I necessarily expected the character to go away. I would have been not be surprised in the slightest. If the season had played out fully the way it was intended, I wouldn't be shocked if Alice would have been a season two character anyway still, just because, you know, she's the sister. They're clearly trying to make her Batwoman's Joker. But you give her a new story in season two. You don't keep treading water with the same thing.
Yeah, agreed.
But unfortunately, at least for a while, they're going to be stuck in this same story that she has been so front and center the whole season. And to their credit, they have handled her character better than they handled Cicada being front and center for an entire season with Flash. But still, a year and a half focusing on that? That's too much.
We can only blame COVID-19 for that. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Supergirl, Season 5, Episode 19, Immortal Kombat. So, at the end of last week's episode, Lena comes to Supergirl to get her help stopping Lex. And as we see at the beginning of this episode, Kara is not ready to forgive Lena. Lena offers to make her an anti-kryptonite suit, and to get Kara safely across town to Luther Corp, the Martians will serve as Supergirl's decoys to lure out Leviathan. We see Alex gets a costume thanks to John, and we have Alex and Kelly track down William, who we saw captured by Eve Testmacher last episode. Supergirl is able to convince Eve to help them by promising to save her mother from Lex. And Eve explains Leviathan's plan is to kill the humans, all the humans in the virtual reality who are attending the Obsidian's Unity Festival. We see Supergirl go into the virtual reality and give a speech to convince everybody to log off Obsidian. Brainiac sacrifices his life to capture Leviathan using his shrinking technology. And with Leviathan all bottled up, Lex shows up and steals the bottle as Brainy is dying. And at the end of that episode, we see Lex hand the bottle over to his mother, Lillian. So, the season finale leaves us with some important questions. Is Brainy alive? What is Lex and Lillian going to do with that bottle of Leviathan? And who is Gemma answering to now? And if you notice, in Batwoman, at the end, we had nothing. But at the end of this episode, we had to be continued.
I think, well, I mean, to be honest, it makes more sense at the end of Supergirl because there's a lot more hanging threads, I feel like.
Yes, there is.
Obviously, Batwoman was building up towards something with Alice, but there's less, in a weird way, there are less loose threads with the ending of Batwoman.
Honestly, this episode had a lot going on.
It did. I have to say, so there were some things I liked. I liked that we finally got other Leviathan members. Finally.
Yes.
I don't know if I vocalized this on the podcast or not, but it's been really bothering me that there've only been two members of this supposed world dominating secret organization. It was just two people. And like, obviously there's this mysterious third person that is their boss, but I was glad, even though it was only two extra, even just two extra people in Leviathan made a huge difference for me. I very much enjoyed that. On the other side, I already hated Kara's speech to 2 billion people before she had even given the speech. Like, as soon as they were like, "I hope you have one of your hope speeches lined up," I physically was already rolling my eyes, Drew, and they hadn't even done the scene yet. Because of course she gets all 2 billion people to agree to her point with the same speech.
Yeah, that would never happen. I'm sorry.
No, it wouldn't. And especially, I found it rung so hollow. I'm not even nitpicking in terms of, you know, not liking the speech. In terms of what the episode is so focused on, you have to actually face your problems. You can't run away and escape. Face your problems. I don't disagree with that. And I agree with the point of what she's trying to say. However, if your whole point of your show is to not run away from problems, then I'm sorry, you have to acknowledge the world that we live in. You're not going to get 2 billion people that are going to agree with her. Some people are going to effectively give her the finger and be like, "No, I'm going to keep doing my own thing." It's not going to be 100% success rate. It's just not. If you're going to say we can't pretend and escape from our problems, but part of the problem with humanity is that we don't all agree. And that's fine. Like, we don't, not say we have to, but we don't. We don't. As a species, we do not all agree. You're not going to get 2 billion people to all universally agree with her.
I know. I thought it was utterly ridiculous that all the humans would log off Obsidian. I'm sorry. There would be people that want to stay in there, and they wouldn't even care if they were going to die or not.
I'm not saying this to be bloodthirsty, but frankly, it would have given more depth to the episode. I think it would have given more pathos. Like, she exits. To me, it's too clean, if that makes sense. Like, she goes, she does it, everything's fine. Everybody is saved. Everybody is saved. It's all good. Everybody gets a clean slate. Wouldn't it be more meaningful if, let's not even say like half, let's say
5%?
5%, which is a crap ton of people out of 2 billion, but 5% of them say no and they don't log off and they do get hit with whatever Leviathan's plan is. Isn't that more interesting? Isn't it more interesting to see how Supergirl reacts to that?
Yes. And it would have more of an impact on humanity than if nobody dies.
You have the guilt of the team, like they did all they could, but they couldn't quite do it. Like, it just was too clean. And to be frank, I mean, it would be 5% of 2 billion not real people. So it's not like faceless people that we've never seen on the show. So it's just, I did not like that. I also, 2 billion people all on a service at once in itself is a really hard pill to swallow, because do they understand how large of a population that is? I mean, good Lord. But then that wasn't, and I didn't understand how they somehow magically got 2 billion people onto this service. But then that was not enough, that Lex just easily convinced the Leviathan gal that was no, we got to wait to get half the world population. I was like, wow, sorry, but for a villainous plot, killing 2 billion people is not enough. That's insufficient. The world wouldn't be radically, radically changed by the death of 2 billion people, especially when you compare the other events that the show gives them credit for, like Pompeii. Last I checked, Pompeii didn't blow off half of the planet.
Yeah, I see your point.
One other thing I wanted to get your opinion on, because I found the scene really odd, was when Lex goes back and finds Brainy with the bottle. His initial reaction is he's really upset that Brainy didn't wait. And then like halfway through, he just like flips and is like, "Actually, just kidding. It's fine."
I found that scene confusing. I couldn't figure out if he was legitimately upset that Brainy, like I believe that he knew Brainy would bottle Leviathan. Was he upset that Brainy didn't wait to bottle Leviathan, or was that first part just an act? And in which case, if it was just an act, what was the point of that first 2 minutes?
It felt like to me that they had written it one way and then changed it. That's what it felt like to me, because it was a weird transition.
That makes sense, because I'm not going to lie. That first 2 minutes of that rant, I hated it. I was like, what? What do you mean? Why couldn't he wait? What? You really, Lex Luthor, thought that Brainiac would just sit and let Supergirl die? Of course he wouldn't. That's why I couldn't understand. I was like, what are you talking about? Of course he wouldn't do that. Of course he wouldn't just sit by and let his friends die. Are you kidding me? And then when he flipped the switch and was like, I knew that you would bottle and thank you, and walks away, I was like, yes, that's Lex. I liked all of that. What was the point of that first 2 minutes? Because, like, no crap. Obviously, he's not going to let Supergirl die. That shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. Even Lex, in his crazy, laser-focused hatred of the Kryptonians, should not be surprised by that.
Nope. And I just think it was they changed something. Because it was just awkward. It was an awkward transition.
It was very awkward. I personally think that they should have just cut the first part of that scene. Because it just, to be honest, that first part just did not land with me. It's like, I buy Lex being very upset that Supergirl didn't die the way he wanted. But him being mad in terms of, like, shocked that Brainy wouldn't let her die just didn't. I was like, Lex isn't a moron. He would know that Brainy wouldn't do that. So, I don't know. I liked the second half of the scene. I really felt like they maybe should have cut that first part somehow.
Well, we've talked about this before. There was some change in Lex's story, if you remember us reporting it in DC on DC News a few weeks ago. And this might have been part of that change.
I wonder now. Initially, we were thinking, and I will admit, I must have been pretty wrong about a lot of this, that they had made some changes to what we were seeing in the shows, and I'm wondering how much that is true. I feel like I was actually quite wrong about that, and that we're seeing the episodes air mainly the way they were intended to, and I could be wrong. I truly don't know. I am just stabbing in the dark. And so I wonder if they really did change something for Lex's story, for what we saw, or if what he meant by him winning, so to speak, is that because they didn't air the last two or three episodes, he doesn't lose.
That could very well be, too.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The change, so to speak, is that they just don't air the episodes in which he inevitably loses.
Yeah, that could very well be. This was clearly not the end of the story.
Right. So, and I will say, I truly do not know. I don't know. It would be interesting if they actually legitimately did change something with what we saw with Lex. And like you said, I could see something with that scene, because they really, the halves of those scenes really do not jive together. They don't make sense. But I don't know. Was that just wonky writing, or was that an actual shift in the Lex story?
We may never know.
I'd be curious to find out.
Yeah, we may never know. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Flash, Season 6, Episode 19, Success is Assured. Team Flash gathers at Barry's CSI lab to figure out their next move for dealing with Eva and freeing their friends. The diamond Sue stole and gave back to Ralph contains a map that leads them to one of Black Hole's warehouses, where we find Amir Singh is trying to burn it down. In the wake of the warehouse fire, Barry approaches Carver and offers him protection against his wife. And after taunting Barry with the fact that the Mirrorverse changed Iris, he rejects Barry's help because he believes his black hole minions will save him. And of course, he immediately changes his mind once he figures out they're helping Eva. So, Team Flash accompanies Carver back to McCullough Technologies, where they try to surround it with a force field. McCullough's workers evacuate the building, and we see that Ralph notices Sue in the crowd and realizes she took her parents' place in Black Hole to save them so she could get closer to kill Carver. In Carver's panic room, Barry confronts Eva, who has gone full Mirror Master. She corners her husband and throws mirror shards at him, and we see Barry dive in front of him in the last second and saves him. But that doesn't really matter because Eva still pushes the mirror right through Barry and into her husband, killing him. That was kind of gruesome.
That was brutal.
Yeah. The next day, Eva holds a press conference, and during it, she lies about where she's been for the past 6 years, and she declares that she's been taking over McCullough Technologies in the wake of her husband's death. And then she ends up framing Sue for Carver's murder. We see Barry visits Caitlin before Carla takes her off for treatment, and Caitlin reminds him that his secret power has always been love. And voila, Joe West comes out of witness protection now that Carver's dead. And back in the Mirror Universe, Iris manages to find out where Sing is. But right after she does, she disappears. And then Camilla's there by herself. And then we get the to be continued.
I found the Joe West thing a little bit weird. I believe that, like, a normal person, like, reunion would play out something like that, but in terms of like a TV show, he wasn't gone that long.
No, he wasn't.
You know what I mean? Like, in terms, like, I get it. In terms of like actual human interaction, yes, I understand the excitement there, but it's a TV show ultimately, and it just, you know, as an audience member, it felt weird. I was like, he was gone like two episodes.
Yep, exactly what I was thinking too.
One thing I found really intriguing was I found Joe Carver's talk about how the Mirror Universe sort of warped Eva really interesting, because it laid the seed of doubt of, like, he's clearly a bad guy.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
But like, and I'm not doubting that, but I loved how it kind of put that seed in your head of, like, did he actually abandon her, or was he telling the truth? Right towards the end, he says that he did try and, like, get her out, and it didn't work. And he truly, clearly, legitimately did not believe that she was his wife anymore. I found that very interesting, because it was like, how much did she get warped by the Mirror Universe? Is he a lying manipulator? Maybe, probably. But is there a kernel of truth to that also? I don't know. I found that very interesting.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if they're hinting at Iris becoming warped by that Mirror Universe too. Is she going to become an evil version of herself that Barry's going to have to save?
Yeah. Yeah. That could be interesting to see.
Yeah. Cause she could end up joining Eva for all we know. And it's weird that she disappeared. Yeah. I don't know what that means. So, I mean, Team Flash could come back next season, save everybody, and Iris be missing still, and we're spending who knows how long trying to find Iris.
I actually, in contrast to Batwoman, I actually don't think that this storyline getting extended is the worst thing, to be honest. I find it pretty interesting. I find Eva to be an interesting Mirror Master version. I'm not upset that we might still only get the missing three episodes. But we might not.
Yeah, we might not.
They might just write it out into the full first half of the season, and I would be fine with that. I think they could do it, too. I think you could do something. To be honest with you, I almost think I'd be a little disappointed in the status quo that we see Eva reach at the end of this episode. She's firmly established back in the world, and yet we know she's also a Mirror Master villain, you know, behind the camera. I think that's an interesting thing that's worth exploring for more than two episodes.
Let me throw this tidbit out at you. What do you think if Eva is going to start building the rogues?
That would be amazing. I think that the chances of that being the case are slim. And if it is, it's going to be the female rogues that we saw And I don't know how much we would enjoy that.
I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
I can't see because, well, okay, so due to crisis, Weather Wizard might be alive again, which would be nice. Because otherwise, I can't see us. I can't help but feel like if she did do the Rogues, which I would not be necessarily upset about, you would get her. It would almost certainly end up being Weather Witch,
yep.
who I don't like. Who was, I can't remember, who was the other one that was with Weather Witch?
I can't remember.
It was a female version of a rogue. I want to say Top, but it wasn't Top because we had an episode with Top.
Yeah. I can't remember, Cletus.
Okay, anyway, sorry. But I don't know. I would not be upset. The one problem that they have, unfortunately, is that, in my opinion, to do the rogues right, you have to have Captain Cold. Like, they're not the rogues without him. I don't know how they can do that.
Oh, man, if they got Captain Cold back, that'd be freaking awesome.
They would have to get I really don't think they could recast the actor.
No, I don't think so either. I mean,
you can do it, but it would be the same. The problem with recasting it is that he was too integral of, even though it was only one season, he was too integral of a character in the first season of Legends. And I know most of that season doesn't count in terms of what happens, but he does. Like, the ramifications of what he did, we still see references and things with him in Legends. And you would create this weird dynamic if you all of a sudden have this different Captain Cold.
Well, all you could say, all you could point back at Crisis and go, well, we got a new version.
Yeah.
So.
The other one that I think would be great is if they redid Boomerang, but I wonder if they can. I wouldn't be surprised if they can't do him.
Yeah, Suicide Squad. Yep.
So stupid.
Yeah, we both know our opinion on that.
But I think, unfortunately, so Heatwave is obviously also a major rogue. That's completely out of the question.
Yes.
Unfortunately, so he's out. That's the problem. I think, unfortunately, the time to do the rogues was early in the show's run, and they missed it because they just refused to do it for some reason. And now I think it's a worry that it's too late, because they were able at one point to have Boomerang on. They clearly can't anymore, or at least it doesn't seem like they can anymore. Captain Cold would have to do some really weird stuff plot wise to have him be there, and you can't have Heatwave. So I don't know.
Yeah, when I mentioned the Rogues, I was meaning a new Rogues team, not the one we're familiar with. The show putting its own version together.
That's true, and that's probably what they would. That's probably what they would have to do.
Yeah,
but it's also, I don't know. It's disappointing that that's what they would have to do, because it seemed like in the first season they were building up to do the rogues. They had the rogues that you would want, right?
Right.
They had Captain Cold. They had Weather Wizard. They had Heatwave, and then they just didn't do it.
One of the characters I miss is Golden Glider. Her and Cisco's chemistry was great in the first season.
Yeah. Part of me wonders if it was intended to be a season two thing, and then something changed, and then it just never happened. I wonder, because Geoff Johns was involved in the first season. I don't think he was after that, right?
Yeah, he wasn't after that.
I think that was the difference.
Yep.
Because you know, Geoff Johns, especially Captain Cold, loves Captain Cold.
Yeah,
and they're obviously would also want the Rogues. So I bet when Johns left his, however heavy of an involvement it was, I don't know, but I'm sure that's why you had a buildup of the Rogues season one and then didn't anymore. Anyway, back to the episode. I like Mirrormaster, and I'm not upset that I think we might end up getting more episodes with her.
Yeah, I'm sure of it. So I'm expecting at least here for half a season next year.
And they've played her right. I think I really like the way, ironically, it's funny that she was only meant to be, or at least we assume that she was meant to be defeated at the end of the season, right?
Right.
It's funny that she was only meant to be a half season villain, because the way that they used her character would have worked had they done something similar as a full season, because she wasn't overtly a villain the first like two or three episodes, I think, or at least two. You didn't know for sure that she was a bad guy.
Yeah, you thought she was a victim. At least I did.
Yeah, I think it was certainly one. I think it was at least two episodes where she was not established to be a villain. You could have suspected that she was, but the show did not confirm it. And then she slowly was doing stuff sort of in the background. Like, that's a perfect slow buildup. And not to say that that's not good for half a season. It is. But ironically, it also would have worked okay, especially compared to somebody like Cicada, as a full season thing, because she's not directly conflicting with the team so quickly.
Right.
Right. And then where it gets to be sort of kind of absurd that the team can't take her down. Instead, she's only fought Barry truly once, sort of twice, but really she just shoved glass through him the second time. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
She's only truly conflicted with him once, and she very much bested him in that first fight. So, yeah, I'm kind of excited at the prospect that we might get more with that villain. And I kind of hope that they do more. The time that they have comes up with some more interesting mirror stuff that they can do.
Well, we know because they're doing Black Hole and they've introduced Godspeed, I have a feeling that story is going to tie together somehow.
You might be onto something. I still wonder if they are connected or if they're just coincidental. Like, they're just cherry-picking stuff from the modern series.
That could be. I don't know. I mean, but he was in the comic book, he was part of the Black Hole.
Right. No, so. You're certainly right. I wonder if that was intended for the show or not. I don't know. They were clearly hinting at Godspeed tying into something in the future, for sure.
Right.
And I wonder if that was supposed to be tied to Black Hole. Like Black Hole is defeated in a sense at the end of this season, but some version of it keeps going and Godspeed ends up being tied to it. I don't know. Certainly possible.
Yep, certainly possible. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Legends Tomorrow, Season 5, Episode 12, Freaks and Geeks. Okay, before we even get into this episode, I gotta say, Cletus, I was very surprised to find out this wasn't the season finale. We actually have more episodes of Legends. I thought it was done, and then found out when Stargirl premiered, there was a new episode of Legends after it. Very surprised.
Do you know how many more we're getting?
I think the season finale is June 2nd or 3rd, something like that. So only two or three more.
We might be getting close to the actual finale of that show.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering when I saw how many episodes it had. I'm like, wait a minute, are we getting this whole season? Clearly, this episode, when I watched it, it didn't look like it was messed with at all.
No, and it feels like it's building towards the. I wonder if we are getting, if not the full season, very close to the full season.
Yeah. I was very surprised to see we had more episodes. I thought this, and I think I even said I thought this was the season finale for this show too. So.
And I assumed it was going to be until you told me.
Yeah, I texted you very excited.
Yeah. Which is great because this was a good episode, but would have been a terrible way to end the season.
No kidding. All right, let's get into this thing. So the Legends have all the pieces of the Loom of Fate, but they can't use it because they don't have three people with the power of the gods. Going through Constantine's spell books, Nate recognizes the Chug Cup from his days at Hudson University. Turns out a fraternity is currently in possession of the cup, and one of the fraternity brothers is actually the Greek god Dionysus. The women create their own sorority to win the Chug Cup, and their fake sorority takes over Constantine's House of Secrets. Nate tries to become friends with Dionysus and becomes enchanted under a spell, becoming Shotgun Nate. That was so freaking hilarious. We also see Mick and Lita tour the school. To make sure she gets in like the other rich kids did, Mick goes back in time, donates money, and gets his name on the building. I just found that hilarious.
That was great. I'm not going to lie. It feels like, and it makes sense plot-wise that Rory would, given that he has time traveled way more than anybody else has because of that weird time where he was that other character whose name I don't remember. But I do feel like he utilizes the time travel more than some of the other characters. Am I crazy in thinking that? I feel like he time jumps more. At least, it's always almost, anytime they do, apart from the, obviously, the main time jump to whatever the main plot is, any other time we see time travel stuff, it's usually a gag, but I feel like it's usually Rory.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. A lot of times it is.
That is not a complaint in the slightest. It's kind of nice. It's one thing I do wish this show would, I know that they are technically time traveling every episode, but I do wish, it doesn't always consistently feel like a time travel show, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And mixed characters, just, it seems like he's not really part of the team. He's just hanging around most of the time. You know what I mean?
I can't remember the last time he actually truly felt like a part of the team. It's not to say, I mean, he's featured clearly in every season, but like, it's just like you said, I think you said it perfectly. It's like he's just sort of coincidentally there.
Yeah. I mean, he's just hanging around. You know, it's like he's done what he's supposed to do and now he's just hanging out. Hey, he's obviously rich. You saw his storeroom of trinkets he's stolen over time.
I have to say, one thing I've always kind of wondered specifically with that actor, and I've done no research into this, is he like only half involved in the show? I don't know, because it seems so frequently like he's only got like a handful of scenes that, relatively speaking, couldn't have taken that long.
Yeah.
Filming-wise, and it makes me wonder if he's like doing something else or like has something in his contract where, like, I don't know, is he spending time with his family? I have no idea. But I know it's an ensemble show, so obviously you're not going to heavily feature every character. But like comparatively, Nate is always heavily featured in the episodes, which is fine. I really enjoy his character. But it, like, I get the sense that actor is probably on set most of the time. I don't get the sense that Mick's actor is on set all the time.
When he is, he's holding a beer.
but you know what I mean? Like, it feels sometimes like the dude. Which is great for him, which is, it's phenomenal. It feels like he's getting paid to show up, film like two scenes, like you said, holding a beer bottle. And some episodes he is actually, you know, like he does have actual plot lines, but it feels like half the time the dude must film like three scenes and he's done for the whole week.
No kidding. I'm here.
What a great deal.
I'm here. I got my beer. All right. See you guys later. But if you notice, most of the time, Mick is part of the story sometimes, but most of the time, he's off doing his own thing. Whether it's his books, his daughter, or whatever is going on with him. Anyways, let's get back to the story. Eventually, the women throw a party stealing Dionysus of his followers, and Dionysus and Sarah play beer pong for the Chug Cup, which Sarah wins easily using her powers. The legends drink from the chalice and begin to glow as they now have immortality for 24 hours. Except for Zari, who, because of religious reasons, is prohibited from drinking. And I was waiting for some sort of trick, because Zari is going to be the only one that's immune for whatever happens to the cup. I kept expecting some sort of trick, but we never got any reveal about some sort of trick.
I actually expected the opposite of that, where, not this episode, but I am anticipating, part of me was like, oh, they're gonna kill her. They are all effectively currently immortal right now, except for her.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
And she wants to get her brother back. We've already seen that character do it. I just part of me can't rule it out that they're gonna take the character off the show again, maybe in a permanent fashion this time.
Yeah.
And maybe making it a sort of thing where you can't have this world where both the siblings are on the legends. It has to be one or the other. I don't know. it could go either way. I mean, I can certainly see your side where she somehow benefits because she's the only one that didn't drink from it. But my mind, I guess, went cup half empty. Something bad is going to happen to her because she's the only one that didn't drink from the cup.
I didn't think about that either. It'll be interesting.
Or it could just be nothing. They could have just done it for character consistency because I totally buy her reasoning for not drinking from it.
Yeah.
And that's it. There is nothing behind it one way or the other.
At the end of the episode, we get the scene where, I forget her name, but she approaches Astra in secret and reminds her that she owes a favor for what she did to Constantine. And she's collecting the debt.
I mean, a pretty obvious development. I have to admit, it was a little bit of frustrating development because it felt like we were going to finally move on from the, like, it feels like it's required for a new character to just not get along with the team. They have an episode where they finally learn how to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. And I was like, oh, God, thank God we finally peeled that Band-Aid off. We don't need to see her constantly just being a jerk to everybody.
Yeah.
And but then nope. They do that, and it's like, oh. So frustrating in that regard. It makes sense. I'm not surprised in the slightest that that happened, but we had just finally gotten where she was just going to be a normal member of the crew, Drew.
I know. And then that happens. I honestly, I'm wondering if Astra is going to stay with the team all next season.
It kind of feels like they're building her to be a member of the team, right?
Yeah, that's what I got the feeling of, too.
I mean, then again, it felt like they were going to add the werewolf lady, and mercifully they didn't, so who knows?
Yeah, we will, I guess we'll have to see, huh?
Yeah.
So, well, at least we're going to get more episodes of Legends, so we're not done with it yet. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, there are quite a few DC movies on HBO Max. I wanted to recommend some masterpieces, and it's hard, so hard to choose one. You've got Catwoman, one of the greatest DC films of all time. You've got Jonah Hex. You've got the 1980s Supergirl, who plays Supergirl's mom on the TV show.
Right. Phenomenal. I'm pretty sure film. That's from 84. I'm pretty sure.
Have you seen it?
A long time ago. Actually, that's, I've seen it.
So bad.
I've seen it.
I mean, great. I'm sorry. All of these are great films. You've got Green Lantern, Rai, my guy. And the true, like, cherry on top of the sundae. You can't be a DC fan and not watch all these films, obviously, is Steel, starring Shaquille O'Neal, is somehow on this, which is hilarious. Like, I guess, like, why not put it on? Because they have it, but, like, oh my God. Whew, what a collection of layers. There are some actually really good stuff that I would recommend. Watchmen, if you didn't get a chance.
That's on my bucket list.
I strongly recommend you watch that. If you didn't see Joker, when it was in theaters, I recommend that. It's a very good movie. But obviously, you definitely need to watch Steel and Catwoman before that, though.
You got to check out Shazam if you haven't seen it.
Yes, I legitimately recommend that one. Also.
All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about Doom Patrol. If you haven't checked out Season 1, it's now on HBO Max 2. And Season 2 is going to be coming along about a month. Month and a half, something like that. So I suggest checking that out before Season 2 comes out, because we'll definitely be reviewing that.
I am so excited for Season 2 of that show.
You know what's different about this year than other years? We actually have content going into the summer that's just not all comics talk. I'm very excited about that. We've got Stargirl. Yeah, we're gonna have Doom Patrol. So it's going to be awesome. It would probably carry us most of the way into the fall if the shows hadn't been pushed back.
Yeah, that is the bummer.
So we're supposed to be getting Wonder Woman 2 later this year. So lots of DC stuff on the horizon.
Yep.
All right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Coming up next week, we'll be talking Aquaman, Justice League, The Terrifics, the season premiere of Stargirl, and of course, the next episode of Legends. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.